People misunderstood how possessions happen. Decades of Hollywood misrepresentation, separation from old traditions, and a cult of silent suffering keep these things out of the public consciousness and make us vulnerable. When it began happening to me, I had no idea what I was dealing with. That ignorance let it fester and grow. I'm actually certain of the exact moment of contamination. I was on an archaeological dig in Montana with 24 other students. We were all unearthing ancient out-of-place fossils and artifacts that multiple years of meltback had freed from receding glaciers. There was a rather huge range of relics to be discovered, including never-before-seen religious sundries used by cavemen and dated some 90,000 years before humans were supposed to have come to North America. While Eurasian Neanderthals had been starting to bury their dead, these surprisingly modern bones had belonged to people with complex worshipping practices. It was all disconcerting enough to our professor, who had chosen the site more or less at random, had so far chosen not to go public with the discovery. There was every chance we were mistaken. The data was flawed, or something extraordinary had happened to transport these things here. It would take time to piece together an accurate picture. That particular day, that particular hour, a fellow student named Greer had yet again bullied me into taking his ship. I was already tired from digging all morning, but he was built far more like those sturdy cavemen than I was, and I didn't feel like taking another secret punch in the gut. As a result, I was the one dusting away the dirt from an oddly spiked kneecap when a cold gust of wind knocked me forward and caused me to slice my pinky finger. It was nothing, really, a scrape. The kneecap protrusion, still sharp even after 90,000 years, and I rubbed my finger against my jacket to dispel the itch the scrape had brought with it. I couldn't have known at the time that this malformed skeleton was surrounded by the heaviest concentration of religious relics. I'm not sure what I would have done even if I had known. The itching continued to nag at my awareness for the next several hours, enough that I had sought out some basic medical supplies when I got back to my tent. Disinfectant seemed to make it go away, and I finally lay exhausted on my sleeping bag and hoped to do nothing but sleep for the next 12 hours. Unfortunately, that was when Greer invaded my tent and insisted I join him for drinking with some of his female students. But we were not friends. It was all part of his carrot-and-stick routine for controlling people. Threaten quietly, reward publicly, and never let them relax. I, of course, felt trapped. His rewards were all chosen. He seemed to saunter effortlessly among circles of girls that usually so icily shut me out, and I was welcome, and even adored, as long as I was riding his coattail. There was no way for me to turn down this opportunity, and taking him up on it just put me further under the effects of his later bullying. By that night, I felt odd. With some alcohol in me, I began to feel that itch returning. No matter how much I scratched my hand, I never seemed to hit the right spot. It was as if the growing burning was a millimeter or two above my skin and maddeningly unreachable for lack of actual contact. I excused myself a few hours in to go deal with the infuriating annoyance more thoroughly, but Greer caught up and stopped me. He was a head and a half taller than me, and he knew it. Usually I backed down, but that night I was filled with fiery energy. A push sent him staggering back, and he just stared at me as I stalked away towards my tent. Once alone, I scratched my pinky finger until it started to bleed, and then I took out a knife, only stopped when I realized that I would just deal myself horrible damage. No, I needed another strategy. If the itch was a millimeter above my skin, maybe I could do the opposite of cutting it. Carefully squeezing the skin, I managed to bunch it up a millimeter high and then rub my contorted hands against the rough fabric of my work jeans. Oh God, that was heaven. I couldn't even describe how great that first relief felt. The more apt saying would be that it was just like scratching a long-denied itch, but that was actually exactly what it was. In any case, I lay on my sleeping bag, sighed happily, and slept wonderfully. My dream that night was simple enough. I was walking across snow somewhere, but I wasn't cold. I awoke to about 5 seconds of continued happiness, and then the itch set in again. Staring at my hand in confusion, I realized that the itch was now undeniably outside my hand. I could rotate it and feel the position change, always maintaining itself about an inch to the right of my pinky finger. How could I have an itch outside of my body? agonized and overwhelmed by a tide of anxious energy brought on by the return of the itch, I began considering rather terrible alternative. At first, of course, try to ignore it. The burning continued outside of my hand and even outside of my glove. As I tried to participate in the dig, I was brought back at the same malformed body that day, and the itch intensified greatly whenever I went too near. I did my best to focus all my energy on resisting the annoying pain, but digging out new bones is delicate work, and I knew I would just damage something if I continued. I pretended I was sick and headed back to my tent. Greer found me out of sight of the others and left me with a bruised arm and abdomen. Bastard. It was his way, cold, calculated, and private punishment. I didn't have spare energy to resist, and I walked off the added pain. In fact, the hurt helped me do what needed to be done once I was safely alone in my tent. I'd already found the basic solution the night before, and now I just needed to get my skin an inch out from my pinky. Wincing, I carefully pulled my knife again, sanitized my finger with rubbing alcohol, and then went to work. I aimed to do as little damage as possible. Cutting a tiny flap of skin, I lifted it, but didn't reach my goal. Steeling myself, I cut a little bit further and then lifted a bit higher. Still not enough. With tears running down my burning cheeks, I cut all the way to my nail and lifted the flap of skin away from the muscle. I sighed with euphoria as the scratching finally made contact. It was over. Oh god, it was over. I scratched to my heart's content before closing the skin again and using bio glue to seal the cuts. I wrapped up my pinky and fell asleep. I dreamt again of walking across vast glacier under an open primordial sky. This time evening fell, and I sighted something unexpected on a distant mountain. Light. I awoke and lay quietly for a time. Cutting myself had been crazy, but that was all over. I was just glad nobody else had seen me behaving so strangely. My relief faded as a familiar burning sensation sparked up again. This time it was a wide strip of itching nearly a foot outside of my right arm. I slammed my fist into the hard ground underneath the fabric of my tent, collapsed, and even cried a little, but I knew that there was not going to be an easy way out of this like I thought. I couldn't. No, 12 inches out, the amount of cutting would be unthinkable. I'd have to... I was thinking... I just had to apply some knowledge. I got out my phone, and I did some searches on the internet. Proprioception. That's what it was called. The human body's sense of where its own limbs are. It was different from the vestibular system, I read. Narrowing down what I needed to know. All right, malfunctions in the proprioception system. What could I find? Phantom limb syndrome. Sitting frozen for a time as the itching tingled quietly, I knew I'd hit upon the problem. I hadn't had a limb amputated, but I knew this was still it. I was experiencing phantom limb pain from a limb that I had never had. Rushing to the dig site, I pretended all was well and went back to work. On fire! In more ways than one, I ignored the itching and uncovered as much of the strange skeleton as I could. My suspicion was vindicated when I began revealing from the ancient rock a third arm. The bones were different in shape and structure, but likely would have been categorized as being from a different skeleton. But I knew, whatever this thing was, it had more than two limbs. My understanding of the situation still contained numerous missing pieces, including the mechanisms of how I had contracted this thing's proprioceptive sense of self, but I had some idea what I was dealing with now. It's easy to say it's time to go to the doctor, but it's another thing to actually do it. I've lived my entire life avoiding the police and avoiding the doctor simply because that's what you do in America. I couldn't even envision myself going to them with fragments I'd found. I'd be locked up in a heartbeat, or given a bankrupting medical bill with no real treatment. No, I had to deal with this on my own. but the limbs gave me an idea. Covering my work with a tarp early and heading off, I evaded the other students and headed on foot to the nearby town with my archaeological tools. It was a small place, mainly populated to serve the national park. But it did have a graveyard. About here is where, objectively, I see my decision-making was a bit compromised. The only thing I can offer in my defense is this. Imagine an itch, the length of your arm, but outside of your body, burning away horribly in a place you can't even scratch. Imagine that going on for an entire day, worsening with each passing moment. The boiling anger and frustration literally cooks the brain, goading it to desperate action. I can tell you too, though it is no real excuse that my actions were not entirely my own. I found the most recent grave and began to dig. The arm was actually fairly intact. After smuggling it back to my tent, I cut away bits of the bone near its shoulder as needed and began stitching both it and myself. See, once it was truly part of me, I scratched myself right into a drug-like high. The leathery skin of the corpse arm came away in many places, as rotting flesh tends to do, but I could feel the itch. So happy. I lay back, relaxed, and slipped into that dream again. After treading across a long valley and climbing a steep, icy slope, I came upon a cave. Wherein dozens of very lost and dirty mammals sat huddled around a fire. The morning light streamed through the fabric of my tent, blending with images that fire woke me in a slow transition. I reached up to block the brightness and stared. My hand was not my hand. No, I mean, my hand was still there. This was a new one. Yeah, I panicked a bit then, somehow during the night, that the arm that I had dug up from a grave and stitched onto myself had become truly attached to me. I could feel through its leathery fingers, move it at will, and even lift things. I had a third arm. What the hell? Even as I stared, the itching began again, this time outside of my left arm. That was the morning that I realized just how deeply in trouble I was. This was no accident, no random brain malfunction, and no allergic reaction. Something was inside me and doing this to me. For God's sake, I'd gone to a graveyard and dug up an arm. Where did the idea come from? And now had it become a functioning part of me? I felt stronger, too. My gear felt lighter. I felt a tension in my muscles that almost demanded I find a way to employ my strength. As I carefully bound one of my arms under my bulky winter jacket so nobody could notice it, I almost hoped Greer would try something today. I was hungry for conflict and rather excited at the prospect of violence. He was weak. I could show him who was in charge. But he and some blonde girl had skipped out that day. Our particular professor was annoyed, but he always let Greer get away with things like that. I could see now that the professor was also somehow under Greer's thumb, pathetic. Piece by piece, I secretly carried the malformed skeleton away and set it up in my tent, exactly as it had been on the ground, surrounding religious artifact and all. What had at first appeared to have been some honored burial now looked to me like an attempted exorcism. Somebody had invented this particular ritual about 90,000 years earlier, which meant there had likely been a very dire need. My left arm burned with awareness, numbing agony. No, I couldn't. I wouldn't. I had to stop myself. But there was another voice inside, whispering about possibility, screaming about relief. It was as if the voice came from the skeleton laid out before me, but also from inside my head. The ancient bones contained a fourth arm that was different from both the original two and the third. I staggered into the chilled woods, intent on fighting the foreign urges with all of my strength. It was better if I was delirious and lost, but then I could never find my way to the graveyard. And yet somehow I did. His new arm attached to me almost immediately. Covered in dirt and rotting gore and sweat, I found my way to the town church. Long ago, men had found a way to deal with this threat, and descendant tradition still existed. The priest within did not believe my rantings and almost called the police until I showed him my forearms and the spiked bone beginning to pierce the skin above my kneecaps and elbows. The foreign entity inside me shed its sly tactics the moment I let myself be chained up. I could hear its voice in my head, angry, violent, arrogant. Where had it come from? What did it want? The terrified priest surely did not know, and he did his best to ignore my rants and pleas until a charade of other priests arrived. They too stared at my forearms. They too crossed their chests. Tied up in a blank walled stone room beneath the church, surrounded by candles and sigils, I found myself evaluating the men for traits I could take from them. Many were older, but one priest was younger and had good muscle tone. I could take that tissue, cut my skin open, push it inside. It would become mine. I was as humans had always been meant to be, editable. It was obvious once little things like squeamishness, disgust, and respect for life were brushed aside. We were modular. Why else would all our parts be so uniform? Even as the priest threw water on me for some reason, I grinned. Humans knew it too. They took livers and lungs and kidneys and even hearts from the dead and put them into the living. What was so wrong with what I was doing? We were all on the same page. The strong deserved to take the weak's best pieces and thus become stronger themselves. That was the way of nature. Why then did these people resist? And they'd asked for this. They'd cried out against their own biochemical failures and eventual mortality. They'd cried out for salvation. They'd prayed. Then been heard. Did they reject what they had asked for simply because their arrogant idea of God looked so much like themselves? They mistakenly believed me to be a demon, but if they thought I was their worst nightmare, then I couldn't imagine how they would react if they ever met a real one. And then it was gone, burning away like so much smoke from my every pore. I was covered in holy water and strange fluids, and two of the priests were down with minor injuries. The rest was cutting at stitches holding my two arms. They fell away, useless. The spiked bones at my knees and elbows receded too. I shouldn't have been surprised that I'd been unaware of most of the exorcism. The entity that'd been fighting for control then, even as it had tried to convince me to support it, had it been lying? It couldn't really have been one of the good guys, could it? I shuddered at the thought that the horrifying world of organic osmosis it had shown me might be the heaven that awaited us after death. You'd be surprised how little bounding there is after an exorcism. It felt a bit like a visit to the DMV. The priests made sure I was all right and that I was myself. And then, well, I was let loose back on the street. It wasn't like I was going to be friends now. Some of them had literally gone white-haired from the shock of whatever they had witnessed, and they refused to discuss it or even look at me. That was it. That was my possession from beginning to end. I still have the skeleton, although any lingering demonic spirit it contained is now gone. The only traces of the entity left are in me. Ideas, attitudes, perhaps. Perhaps a bit of unspoken philosophy. Why speak out? Why tell my tale? Well, it's obvious we've got a lot to learn. The lessons begin now. See, I don't consider what I've done to be bad or disgusting. When they took Greer out of his tent, bleeding, crying, and screaming, I could only feel the predatory triumph of the strong. The students and professors were outwardly horrified, sure, but I could tell that they were appreciative that someone had done something to free them of all of their false god. Appearances were important to this culture. That I knew. Therefore, what I took from him would be unseen by most, and yet it had been the source of his strength, and now be the source of mine. I gazed around the circle of onlookers until I found the blonde girl that he'd dallied with the day before. In a way, I could now see her the way that he had seen her, in all her willingness and beauty. She was a good choice. She made eye contact with me and blushed, but did not look away. I grinned.